The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. I wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, Thanksgiving edition. It's me, Ryan Wilson, and John Breach. And if you're watching on YouTube, he's wearing his Michael Scott telemarketing headset. And Will Brinson will be joining us soon from Parts Unknown. Breach, happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Wilson. You know what's funny is I hung out with a toddler all day just to prepare to hang out with Brinson. And of course, he's not here. So it's like, why did I even hang out with a toddler? It doesn't make any sense. So happy Thanksgiving to you. I like that you copied my Christmas tree look. It looks fantastic.
I copy your Christmas tree look, and we'll get to this game a little bit, but I busted out the Joey Harrington Lions jersey because they had him on. I got the Brady Quinn podcast music for Joey Harrington. But first, Breach, let's talk about, I was going to call it the Sunday night game, the Thursday night game. It felt like a Sunday night game because it was on NBC. New England Patriots traveled to Minnesota to face the Minnesota Vikings in a game that we all thought Kirby Cousins was going to play like Kirby Cousins. Kirby Cousins' record in primetime games, Breach, do you know?
It is ugly. What, like it's 5-13?
10-18 coming into this game.
Oh, it's close.
So he coming into this game on primetime, he'd won 36% of his games. What is his winning percentage in the other 102 games he started in his career?
Above 500.
52%. You got it. So Kirk Cousins had an interception, and, you know, we all made the Kirby jokes early on in our little Slack chat.
Well, and not only did he have the interception, but he also had another pass that should have been intercepted. So yes. When we're talking about a guy who only threw 7 incompletions, 3 of those passes were just horrible primetime Kirk Cousins passes. They all came in the first half, and then it was just he looked like Tom Brady out there.
Yes, absolutely. And it helped that he had Randy Moss playing with him and Justin Jefferson. Yes. And Brinson talks all the time about Tyreek Hill as a sleeper for MVP. How come we never brought up Justin Jefferson?
Maybe we need to start because this was the quietest but also loudest 139-yard game where, you know, after the Bills game and he had the spectacular one-handed catch and he's making all these highlight reel plays. There wasn't like a highlight reel play, but just all these huge plays he kept making. And you know that Bill Belichick spent the entire probably 6 months when he knew they were playing the Vikings saying, we're going to stop Justin Jefferson. That's going to be the one guy that doesn't beat us. And then he does become the one guy that beats you. So that's why it was shocking because, you know, Belichick doesn't like to be beaten by a team's best player.
Right. And if you're watching on YouTube, Billy just put up the graphic. Most receiving yards in the first 3 career seasons, in NFL history, number 1, Justin Jefferson. Number 2, Randy Moss. Number 3, Odell Beckham Jr. That's pretty elite company. And again, Justin Jefferson was the 5th wide receiver taken in that draft, just behind Jalen Reagor, who now returns kicks for the Vikings and actually had a reception. And I was telling Billy before the podcast started, I can't remember the last time that Jalen Reagor, I remember him having a catch before tonight. But huge game for Justin Jefferson. And Adam Gratz, who I used to work with at Fan House, I believe. We also had a Steelers blog for a little bit back in the day. Like, 12 years ago, he tweeted out, and I thought this was pretty funny. Justin Jefferson reminds him, and I can see it, of Antonio Brown, but without the 15 levels of crazy, just in terms of the clutchness. Every catch he had tonight felt like a contested catch, and he made it look easy. And I don't want to say he saved Kirk Cousins, because really good wide receivers make their quarterbacks look good. Kirk Cousins made a lot of good throws, but there were some jump balls that could have gone the other way, like perhaps the last play of the game for the Patriots, the next to last drive, I guess, when Nelson Aguilar couldn't come down with that sort of arm punt near the 3 yard line on 4th and 17 that Mac threw up. You felt like Justin Jefferson's probably catching that football. Does this game breach say more about the Vikings, who got absolutely embarrassed last week, 40-3 at home, or more about a Patriots team that looks to be a lot better than they were, say, a month ago?
I would say it says more about the Vikings, just because we saw what happened on Sunday. I mean, embarrassment is an understatement. They got de-pantsed, Ryan. They didn't have any pants on. And they go into this game, and you're also playing a tough defense. Look, it's hard enough to play a Patriots defense. It's hard enough to face Bill Belichick. But you're doing it only on 3 days preparation. You have to play the game 4 days later. And also, this Patriots team had not given up a touchdown in the month of November. So you're talking about part of that was their competition. They're playing the Colts, who have not been great on offense, the Jets, who have not been great on offense. But when you go more than half a month without giving up a touchdown in the NFL, that's impressive, no matter who it is. So to me, this really said the Vikings are nowhere as close. They just fell on their face Sunday. They just absolutely fell on their face, and I felt like this was a good redemption game. And if you're the Vikings, it kind of gives you that psychological boost of, all right, Kirk can win and play well in these big games. We can play well against these big defenses. And, you know, it's not great to give up 26 points to the Patriots. But I think if you're the Vikings, you walk out of this pretty happy and thinking that, all right, we're legit. You needed a win like this on your resume.
Yeah, Brian Jay in the comments is usually in the comments, and he gets fired up when I don't give Kirk Cousins his due. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, take it easy on that. I understand you're a Vikings fan. You take these things personally. I get that. Just like Bridge takes it personally when I make fun of the Bengals. That has come back to blow up in my face. But I will say this, to your point, Bridge, I agree, because here's the thing. If you look at last week's game, 40-3 is an absolute de-pantsing. The week before, though, they went to Buffalo and won. And then you could make the case that that sort of sandwich game, if you will, the Cowboys, was the aberration, because they just beat the Patriots, which is a good defensive football team. Offensively, they're certainly finding their way, which is a polite way to put it. But again, 2 weeks ago, they played about as well as they could have played and won on the road in a really tough game. So, yeah, I think this is the bounce back game they needed, because I think most of us thought that the Patriots would cover. I think all of us had them covering among the CBS Sports, quote unquote, experts at +2.5. I think a good number of us picked the Patriots to win, just because we didn't know which Vikings team was going to show up. And you mentioned not giving up a touchdown this month. You actually tweeted out, I don't know if you mentioned this also as part of your conversation, you tweeted this out a couple days ago. The defense is getting up a touchdown in the Patriots. Frank Reich was fired after facing the Patriots, and then Zach Wilson was benched after facing the Patriots. So Kirk Cousins, primetime Kirk Cousins, broke the curse. Otherwise, he was going to get benched for, I don't know who the backup quarterback is. Kellen Mond's gone. But, all right, so what about New England? Because another fun fact for the Patriots is that coming into this game, Matt Judon had 13 sacks. Do you know which team also has just as many sacks as that?
The Vikings?
No, the Raiders. It'll make sense when I say it. Like, that's how bad the Raiders have been. So coming into this week, Matt Judon and the Las Vegas Raiders had exactly the same number of sacks. Judon didn't have a sack tonight, so he stays at 13. In fact, Kirby was not sacked once. Is that right? No, he was sacked once by Josh Uche. That's right. Josh Uche almost, you know, dislodged his head from his body. Happy Thanksgiving, Brenton.
What's Brenton, up,
Bruce? Happy Thanksgiving.
So, man, I'll tell you what, when you, you know, when you live in this blue collar farm like this, it's difficult sometimes to get the Wi-Fi going.
So I'll ask you, Brenton. Yeah, you're only 7 minutes late. That's early for you. what are your thoughts on the Patriots?
Well, hold on. Before Brenton gives his thoughts, because I was actually going to start the podcast by bashing the Patriots special teams as the special teams guy, because to me, that's what cost them the game.
I know I showed up late, so I hate to do this, but Wilson, do you remember the time that Breach did the podcast from the, like, that, like, really long
the long tunnel?
Game hallway. Like, yeah. He's wearing a telemarketer headset right now. I love it.
I made the Michael Scott telemarketing joke at the end.
Well, and I was saying the last time I wore this headset was when I talked to you guys from the Super Bowl.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, you wore it out in the stadium parking lot?
No, I was actually still in the stadium, still in the concourse.
Yeah, but actually, let's talk about that in the breach. That's important because you can see, and I want to give a lot of credit to Tirico, always does a good job. But actually, Jason Garrett and Tony Dungy, I like those guys together. I mean, they're both incredibly smart. They're not over the top saying stupid stuff. They're actually saying insightful things. And they're both coaches, one on defense, one on offense, you know, when they were the OCs, so and DCs respectively. So that was actually interesting. But I had no idea Tony Dungy actually played for Bill Belichick.
We'll sit in the host spot. Let him host. He's
no, it's fine.
Right. Well, on holidays, definitely, because he will show up ready to host on a holiday. So, Brinson, that's he right. can be the –
That's right.
It's my idea. I think – Maybe the I like that. I actually thought Garrett and Dungy were – I kept getting thrown off by it because Tirico was with them. But wow. I thought they were pretty good.
I agree. I thought they were insightful, and I like Jason Garrett a lot more when he's not on the sidelines clapping. But I was going to say that Tony Dungy was played for Bill Belichick in New York when Belichick was special teams coordinator, and he kept reiterating just how mad Belichick was going to be if he wasn't currently mad on the sidelines with all the stupid plays. There was the running into the kicker.
Well, hold on. Let me go into this. Sorry, so this is a team that literally won a game on.
Before we move on, I just want to point out one thing about the Dungy, Tirico, Garrett booth. At the end, when it was 3rd and 7, and the Vikings had the ball up 7, and the Patriots had one timeout left, and Tirico asked Dungy, he's like, "Would you run or pass here?" And Dungy's like, "A lot of people like to pass here. I'm definitely running and making them burn the timeout." And then he goes, "Jason, what would you do?" As if there was any question what Jason Garrett would do. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was 3rd and 9 in that situation, and maybe if it's like 3rd and 2 or 3rd and 3, you think about throwing the ball because you have the first down, the game's over. But anyway, look, we know that Belichick is all about the special teams. This team literally won a game because of their special teams on Sunday. I'm sure he's going to cut Michael Plardy sometime in the next 10 days because he was so upset. But look, you look what happened.
Let me ask you that, because I was thinking about Plardy because Jake, what's the
– Well, let me go through this list of everything that went wrong real quick.
All right, I'll
end with Plardy. So you have the kickoff return for a touchdown, which is just total coverage disaster. You can't let that happen, especially after a team – Mac Jones just took you down. You take a 23-16 lead. Oh, that lead's gone 30 seconds later because kickoff return for a touchdown. Then you have the running into a kicker that you had just started to mention. That was on a 4th and 3. The Vikings were punting. The Patriots had forced a 3-and-out. Nope, you get the 5-yard penalty, which, you know, it was good on the refs not to call the roughing kicker because it definitely wasn't roughing. But it does feel like 5 yards was probably correct. That gives the Vikings the first down to go down and score a touchdown. Then we have Michael Plardy with a 29-yard punt and a 36-yard punt in this game, both not in great situations. Jake Bailey's on injured reserve. What a disaster. And then at the end of the game, look, I know Marcus Jones wants to be the hero again, but you do not catch the punt on the 1-yard line. You let it bounce because there was a 95% chance that thing is going to bounce in the end zone. It runs less time off the clock, and you get the ball at the 20-yard line. So you get more yardage and run off less time, which is a good thing, Marcus Jones. So special teams disaster for the Patriots.
Okay, no Marcus Jones comment because you're exactly right. What do you say if you're Kyle Duggar and you're in the meeting on whenever they meet Saturday, and you say, listen, Coach Belichick, that guy for the Vikings, Ham, was holding me. I couldn't set the edge. What do you say to that, Breach?
Well, I think that the Patriots aren't going to complain to the NFL because they're like, we got away with a block in the back on Sunday, so what goes around comes around. But it looked like he got held, and they probably should have called the penalty. But again, if anyone knows that you're going to miss calls on returns, it is the Patriots because it just happened 4 days ago, even if the NFL says it wasn't a block in the back. So it's iffy calls happen in the NFL all the time. I don't think you can pin it on that. But I don't think Duggar's going to get like a D-minus for his grade on that play because the coaches will say, yeah, you did get held.
And
He will be the only player who doesn't get cut from the kickoff return team.
And I don't know if you were listening with the volume on because you were, you know, with your family and stuff. But Dungy did say in those meetings, Belichick is going to say, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you got hold. You still cannot give up the edge there. So to your point, that's not going to matter. Go ahead, Brinson.
I was going to say that I don't know that
Belichick is going to be too mad at Mr. Jones, if only because he did house that punt return against the Jets.
I bet he will be extremely angry with Mr. Jones.
Everybody's going to be pissed.
Yeah, and he'll be angry with the other Mac Jones for all the stupid sacks he took late in the game. We can talk about that in a second. All right, Breach, the other point I wanted to make. So, Pilardi is replacing Jake Bailey, I believe, who's out with an injury. I think that's the punter's name. I can't believe Belichick just didn't lose his mind over there after the second incredibly crappy punt. How is a professional athlete whose job it is to kick a football kick two terrible shanks? Like, how does that happen?
I mean, the last punt was just a choke job. A punt is just, especially indoors. So, like, it's all about your drop. You want your drop to be identical all the time. And if you're outdoors, it's windy, it might move it a half inch, which can keep it from hitting the sweet spot on your foot. But indoors, there are no issues. It is completely your fault. There's no one else to blame. You just made a horrible punt. And, man, it is going to be a horrible, horrible flight home for Michael Pilardi.
So Breach's point there, but that's the only time I ever like thought Breach is like the sweet spot. You want your drop to be identical. It makes you do think Breach could punt a ball a long way. I think they should have gone to that fourth and one when they punted. And I know that's sort of like hindsight based, but I mean, me and my dad and my brother were watching here at my parents' house, and we're like, they're going. We're like, yeah, of course they're going. You got to go. It's fourth and one. It's just, you're a power run team. You know, it's like the whole way that Belichick's built this squad is based on, you know, being able to pick up that 1 yard and don't punt it. I don't know. The Vikings have been moving the ball. They've been, you know, scoring. Like, Jefferson was carving them up. I think you go there on fourth and one. I think that was a mistake by Belichick.
So here's the thing, and don't look, because I'm surprised now that I looked. They are a power running team. I agree. Running is very important to what they do. They made Dungy angry that they weren't running as much as you get angry. Damien Harris was out midway through the second half, I think, with a leg injury. What was Ramondre Stevenson's final rush line?
Ooh. Just I know this one. I know this one.
Well, don't tell
over 5 yards of carry.
Billy, did you just cut us off? Cut all three of us off after saying don't cut each other off?
He was betting the. I won't tell you what number he bet, but just watching that game. What do you think he did?
I will tell you. I don't have any windows open, so I have no idea. I would say 17 carries and 65 yards.
Do you know, Breach?
I just know it was over 5 yards per carry. I don't remember what the numbers were.
So going for it on fourth down, I still think they should have done it, but this informed Belichick's decision. 7 rushing attempts for 36 yards. That was it. It felt like he had 67 or 80 yards, whatever you said.
But
I agree.
That's over 5 yards per carry. Of course, like, why aren't you going for it on fourth and one? I agree with Brenton. I thought that was fourth or two or fourth and three, but fourth and one, it is a little.
But that's what Dungy kept saying. Go ahead.
He had 7 carries?
But that's why Dungy kept saying, please run the ball more in the second half. Damn. So, anyway.
Is this a Matt Patricia, Joe Judge thing? I mean, it seems like a reasonable.
Well, I was thinking this is Matt Patricia's, like, please don't fire me game, because Mac Jones actually played his best game in probably a year and a half.
Might be Matt Patricia's, like Da Vinci or, like, Mona Lisa.
I mean, Mac Jones played as well as he could have possibly played, except for those stupid sacks he took on the last 2 drives. Yeah, I understand. Michael Kenji Azumi mentions in the chat that he got 9 catches for 76 yards, and that's incredibly important. But I'm just talking about in terms of going for it on fourth and short.
You're saying Mac Jones was awesome except for in crunch time.
Yes.
That knee by Mac Jones was unbelievably stupid.
What knee?
When he took the knee in the middle of the field. You didn't see that? I thought you'd be all over that.
When did he take the knee in the middle of the field?
It was like, I think it was the end of the half. He just threw it away. It's like,
oh, man, right. Yeah. No, I saw that. But I think you meant at the end of the game. What was I going
to
say?
The sack was pretty bad, too. You just have to get the ball out quicker.
Yeah. No, that's right. So I thought the Vikings outplayed them, clearly. I thought that the game probably came down to 4 or 5 plays. As Breach mentioned, most of them was on special teams. And Brenton, I'm sure, well, I don't know what you think. So I'll ask you, does this game say more about the Vikings or the Patriots?
I think it says more about the Patriots.
Oh, good.
In the sense that I'm not gonna repeat my father's hot take about Bill Belichick.
His takes cannot be hotter than yours.
Oh no, this is the hottest, worst take I've ever heard in my entire life. I told him, I was like, I won't say it because you will get doxxed on the internet for me saying this. It was poorly phrased, but his entire principle was like, Brady made Belichick, which is not an outrageous claim. A lot of people think that. I disagree. I do think though that, like, you just didn't see these sort of dumb mistakes that we've seen for the Patriots for 20 years. They didn't make these mistakes. Like that running into the kicker is, it's what was it? It was either fourth and three or fourth and four.
It was fourth and three.
I had four at my home, but go ahead.
It doesn't matter. You don't touch that punter. If he doesn't commit that penalty, the Patriots win that game, in my opinion. They pound the ball. They move the ball down the field. They work the clock. They either score a touchdown or kick a field goal. And maybe you force Kirby Cousins in prime. By the way, shout out Kirby Cousins. Played all right prime time.
Played really
well. Like, those are the sort of edges. We talked about the Mike Sando article in on The Athletic, right, where Mike Vrabel is basically creating New England 2.0. They lead the NFL in terms of EPA created by other teams' mistakes by a huge margin. And that's like what Belichick did for 20 years. And now all of a sudden they're running into the kicker on fourth and three or fourth and four, or whatever it was, against a Kirk Cousins in primetime when this guy's like begging you to take the win.
So let me ask you, you're saying this says more about the Patriots, not in a good way, because they actually play pretty well. It says it in a bad way.
I think your boy Mac played really well. And like, I think if you're a Patriots fan, you can, if you want to do the silver lining thing, if you want to be an optimist, you can say, okay, that sucked to lose that game. We're on the road against a team with a really good record, a team that's clearly a playoff. They're a Super Bowl contender. Mm-hmm. We lost. We made a bunch of dumbass penalties. But Mac at least played pretty well, and I feel better about that. But like Belichick's entire Patriots dynasty is built on two things: Tom Brady and Belichick grinding every edge possible. And it felt like the Patriots were your average NFL team tonight in terms of making mistakes. Now, I'm not saying that's who they are now. I just sort of wonder if, like, I mean, you just don't see this many mistakes from a Patriots team.
No, that's true.
It was very bizarre to see those.
And one of the sacks, in Mac Jones' defense, I think it was a sack, it was when Trent Brown tried to cut Danielle Hunter on that third and long play. And Tony Dungy's like, why would you cut him on a third, on a long play, and just get your quarterback absolutely demolished? Before we move on, Brinson, I'll ask you what I asked Breach, because you are the hype man for the Tyreek Hill MVP long shot. Why aren't you mentioning Justin Jefferson?
I don't know.
That's what Breach said.
I mean, that's a great point. It's a fantastic point. Justin Jefferson is, I don't know. I think me and my dad and brother used some form of un-effing believable at least 32 times during this game to describe Justin Jefferson. He is effing ridiculous. Like, and Kirk Cousins made some good throws, but Justin Jefferson is just am I too old to say he's a dog? We can all say he's like, that dude is a dog. Like, he is a damn dog. He's the best wide receiver in football.
Yeah, you're not getting an argument from me.
And I mean, man, if the Vikings got the one seed in the NFC.
Oh boy, here we go. Now we're getting crazy.
I'm scared to load up a second tab right now, honestly.
What happens to run on the Cowboys though?
What are Justin Jefferson's MVP odds?
Oh, I'll look him up.
Or offensive player of the year odds. Because he has a very Ja'Marr Chase 2021 vibe in the sense that he's right there. Everyone loves Justin Jefferson. If he like popped off for some massive like week 16 game and the Vikings stole the number one seed, I think MVP is probably too far but let's
talk himself into anything.
let's say that the Titans are the one seed in the AFC and the Vikings are the one seed in the NFC. And Derrick Henry didn't we ever have a discussion about like the MVP has come from the one seed the last several years?
Yeah, no, Breach says they have to win their division. I don't think they're the number one seed. The number one seed, Breach?
No, it's when most MVP winners come from a division winner.
Right. But you know what I'm saying? Like, if non-Mahomes, non-Bills are the one seed in the AFC, and like the Bills and Chiefs stumble, again, it's a long shot. You're probably getting pretty good odds. He's a wide receiver. And the Vikings have the best record in football. I'll tell you something. Pete Prisco will never, ever in his freaking life cast an MVP vote for Kirk Cousins.
Nor should he.
But
let me ask you this. Do you remember the last time a wide receiver won NFL MVP? Can you name it?
Was it Randy Moss never won it, right?
It's like, is it before the kicker who won it?
It is before never, because it has never happened. A receiver has never won MVP.
Well, I mean, it makes sense if you think about it. Like, a quarterback is throwing to the receiver, so the stats correlate. And everyone wants to vote for a quarterback or a receiver.
All right, they don't have the odds up, so we'll circle back to that.
Tyreek Hill was at plus 8,000 going into week 12, so you can assume Jefferson was bigger than that because he was not listed on the list I had heading into week 12.
Is 80 to 1 or 80 to 1?
Yeah, 80 to 1, 80.
Plus 8,000.
I would take Jefferson anything over 50 to 1, honestly. That's a great point. It's a great question, y'all. All right.
So you want to do Bills Lions or Giants Cowboys? Breach.
Let's take a break first, I think.
All right, let's do that. And then Brinson will tell us what game we're going to next.
Shots.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, Brinson, where are we going?
I don't know. Dealer's choice. You're hosting. God, this is much more fun.
Let's do it for my guy, Joey Harrington. Let's go to the early game.
Why do you have that jersey?
I was telling Billy and Breach earlier, I was rummaging around in my closet looking for something. I said, oh, I have this Joey Harrington jersey. I got at TJ Maxx 15 years ago for $5. And it was in the middle of the first game, and the Lions were actually winning late. And then, of course, things unraveled. But it's a moral victory for me. I like this team. Brinson, I'll start with you because Billy is under the impression, I don't remember this, you say a lot of wacky things. I don't think you're in favor of Dan Campbell getting fired, are you?
No. I think that if he'd won this game, his job security in 2023 was completely locked down.
Do you think there's any chance he gets fired this year?
We're week 12, and he just won their first. They just put together their first three-game winning streak. Are we week 11? Or are you shaking your head?
I don't think there's any chance he gets fired this year.
Yeah. So they just had their first three-game win streak since 2017. Or was it 2019?
Nope, 2017.
This franchise sucks, dude. And they were down to the dumps. We were starting to sort of trend towards Dan Campbell being potentially in trouble. They win three straight games. And then, look, I know they didn't. There are a lot of things they could have done better against this Bills team. But this is the consensus top three team in the NFL. And they nearly upset them at home on Thanksgiving in what easily would have been the signature win of Dan Campbell's career as a head coach, and obviously the head coach of the Lions. I think he's safe mainly because things got real dark and they rallied really hard for him, and they're still playing hard. And I don't think they'll fire him.
No, I think Breach is right, and I think you're right. Absolutely not. And I've always loved Dan Campbell. I always say they feel like they'll run through a brick wall for him. So you're right. They haven't won. Last time they won three in a row prior to this three-game stretch was 2017. The last time they won four in a row was 2015. The last time they won on Thanksgiving was 2016. And Breach, you're going to remember yourself like this. I'm not. Going into last year's Thanksgiving game, what was the Lions' record?
Not good. 1-10.
0-9-1 You're close.
Oh no.
So
by the way, shout out to my Uncle Mills. He like every year at Thanksgiving, he's like, I tell you what, buddy, you never bet against the Lions on Thanksgiving. I'm like, I think you do, like every year,
Mills. That's all you do, Uncle Mills. Our buddy Joe Musso in the chat says, let's get what we're thankful for going in the chat. I'm thankful for Brinson showing up at all. I'll just say that.
I am thankful for Ryan's Joey Harrington jersey. I'm actually ashamed I don't have one. We should all have one.
So, Breach, how are we to feel about Josh Allen? Because he threw another red zone interception.
Josh Allen looks like he's playing injured. Like, I don't think there's any other way to look at this. I mean, he was completely inaccurate. At one point in this game, he was, I think, 14 for 34. He was under 50%. And even though he ended up creeping up over it, and it was, again, I'll go back to the Carson Palmer thing, where not just the velocity, but he said every two or three throws, he just couldn't put it where he wanted to with the UCL injury. And that's what it looks like with Josh Allen, where he just can't put it where he wants to. But then you see the perfect he throws it on a rope at the end of the game to Stephon Diggs. And you're thinking there's no way this guy's injured when he made that pass to Diggs for 36 yards that put them set up the game winning field goal. That throws a laser, and you're thinking, okay, that's the Josh Allen that guy is completing 65% of his passes and is in the running for MVP. But he just missed so many perplexing throws today. That, my God, it was just, you know, that thing's got to heal. And if it doesn't, if this is the Josh Allen that the Bills are going to have for the rest of the season, and this elbow is going to take an offseason to fully heal, I don't know that – I wouldn't pick the Bills to win the Super Bowl if this is – if he's playing injured the rest of the year because it doesn't have time to heal.
So, Breach, I think – and, like, I think I've said this, like, the last couple of weeks, and, like, I didn't – or I asked this maybe, is, like, can Josh Allen take time off – and help his elbow heal, or is this a situation where he has to play until he can't play and then he has to have surgery? Because
this is it, Brinson. He has 10 days off. He's got to heal right now.
No, but I think I'm starting to think it's the latter, because the Bills have had a chance to sit him and rest him. So I think at this point it's either he's refusing to do it, or they know that the only option to solve the elbow injury is surgery. And if they if he has surgery, his season is likely over, because you're not having surgery on your elbow, you know, throwing elbow and then coming back, you know, by the playoffs. And it makes more sense given the state of the NFL, the parity that we've got this year, the Bills roster, how, you know, their chances to win the Super Bowl. I think he's just fighting through it. And I would put the odds of Josh Allen having, like the second the Bills are eliminated from their season's over, him, like the Bills announcing he's having surgery on his elbow at like minus 3,000.
I am not a doctor, but I think if you have surgery on your UCL, usually has to be Tommy John surgery. So it's a pretty serious operation. So it also just could be that the Bills are saying, all right, we have Josh Allen at 88% for the rest of the season. And Josh Allen at 88% is better than Case Keenum at 100%. So we're rolling with Josh Allen, and that's it.
I agree with that. I think it's probably more like
71.
Oh, 71's a better – yeah, 70, somewhere in the 70s. But, like, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's. I think it's got to be the case of they know it's either – the only way to fix the elbow is surgery and his season's done, and their season is done. Or you just play through it and hope he can – you hope you get lucky and you can steal some games. And he's an insane athlete to be doing this with like a UCL injury. And he's just whipping balls still. Now they're not all accurate, but he's still making great throws. I agree with you though. I would not want to bet on, like, if anyone who's listening to this is thinking about betting Josh Allen MVP or Bills to win the Super Bowl, I would caution you not to do either of those things.
Yeah. Musso in the chat, he's clearly a few glasses of red wine in. He's thankful.
Never heard of him.
He said he's thankful for Toradol when talking about Josh Allen, which I thought was actually pretty funny. But I'll just stick to my original analogy last week because it's so good. I only come with these once in a lifetime. The car in the middle of the desert and the engine light comes on, you got to keep driving. I mean, there's no other alternative. Unless, I mean, the car you pass is the Case Keenum Mobile. You're like, eh, you know what? I'll just take my chances and floor this thing. What do you guys know?
You got a Ferrari with an engine light. You're like, do I want to jump in that that Hyundai with three wheels? I don't think so.
No.
And wait. As one of our Scott Murphy in the chat points out, the Bills play next Thursday. He gets a 10-day break after that, but he does have a 10-day break coming, which will be vital as far as his elbow getting better. Because if it doesn't get better in that 10-day break, that's when you're like, oh God, what do? We're riding this injured quarterback for the rest of the season.
But by the way, I've been ordered by HR that I am not allowed to read the chat anymore because they like I went to them as like Joe Musso is a problem. He like won't stop like coming in the chat and just harassing me. And they're like, listen, you just have to turn off the chat. So if I'm not reading your comments, don't be offended. I will still say my same stupid stuff, but it's a Musso thing.
Yeah, I think they actually appreciate it. No offense. So, Brinson, do you know who the Bills' leading rusher is?
For the season?
Yeah.
Didn't we talk about this on Sunday?
I don't know, maybe.
I think it's Josh Allen.
Do you know who the Bills' leading rusher was on Thanksgiving Day?
Based on the final, like, couple of series play calls, I would guess it was probably Josh Allen.
Josh Allen. So this may be his role. He's doing this throughout the year when his elbow was fine, but maybe that's more of the plan. He continues to take these huge hits unnecessarily. What's wrong?
Well, no, I was going to say that, like, the Lions kicked that 51-yard field goal, and then the Bills had 23 seconds, which was it's kind of interesting because it's like, oh, this feels a little bit like that Chiefs game. Like, can you go get this field goal? But they got in range-ish, and then immediately called a couple of just like Josh Allen runs. And I sort of wonder, is that like if Josh Allen was 100% healthy, would they just throw a slant to Diggs? And knowing that Allen is going to get that ball exactly where he wants it to be, and Diggs is going to beat the man coverage or option into the zone, like did they call those runs knowing that they can't be 100% confident in Josh Allen's accuracy right now?
So that's interesting you say that because Scott Murphy mentions in the chat, next week they're at New England. Breach and Brinson, doesn't matter. What about starting Case Keenum next week? This is Scott Murphy's point. And then giving Josh Allen a 17-day break. Breach says no. Why, Breach?
I say no because have you seen the standings? This is...
I have. Yes.
You are in a tight division race. You can't afford any division losses. Josh Allen gives you your best chance to win. And if you drop a game to the Patriots or the Jets, that's their next two opponents because you started Case Keenum. Do you want Case Keenum going up against the Bill Belichick defense? I know Kirk Cousins carved him up tonight on Thanksgiving. Fitting carving turkey. but no, I don't want Case Keenum starting against the Patriots. I want Josh Allen. Division games, you need to win them.
Especially
because the Patriots are 0-2, or the Bills are 0-2 in the division right now. They cannot afford any more division losses.
So the Bills played the last three games were obviously the Lions and the Vikings. Lions, Browns, Vikings, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was their shot to sit Josh Allen. Now you had to look at the schedule and say, okay, that's sort of my whole point about the, I don't know if it's a conspiracy, but like they had six games coming up, three games against non-division opponents, including two NFC opponents. So it doesn't count against your conference record for tiebreaker purposes. And then immediately following, as Breach points out, three conference games coming up next. If you were going to sit Josh Allen, if you thought you could sit him and he would get healthier, the games to sit him were the last three games. Now they went 2-1 in those games. That's great. But like, if you could improve Josh Allen from 71% to 95% and have him sit three games, you do it against the Browns, Vikings, and Lions. And I think Case Keenum could also go 2-1 of those games. And then you have 90%+ Josh Allen against the three division opponents, which help you get the potentially number one seed and of course the division title. The point being is like I don't think sitting Josh Allen will make him healthier. The way the Bills are acting in terms of how they're utilizing Josh Allen, in terms of how they're calling plays, in terms of how they're handling this injury, the way they talk about it makes it seem like it's go like boom or bust. It's either he's playing or he's done for the year.
All right, we'll move on after this with Brinson. I wanted to ask you, let's assume that Detroit won that game and they were in it to the end. There's some special teams miscues. Maybe Breach wants to talk about that. Maybe he doesn't. We'll find out in a second. But let's assume they won and go to 5-6. Then they're only behind Washington, who's at number 8, and they're tied with the Falcons, who are number 9. The Falcons, I mean, the Lions would be, what's the percentage chance that they're making the playoffs?
I would be doing like a huge hype thing about Dan Campbell and Jared Goff and Amon-Ra St. Brown. I mean, like, yeah, like I would be hyping the Lions as a playoff team if they'd won that game.
Preacher, the Lions better than the Falcons, who are at 5-6 and currently the 9th seed?
I would say yes, because the Lions were arguably just as good as the Bills today. I mean, they lost this game because of a couple stupid mistakes. I mean, look, I know we hear Jason Garrett, the classic, hey, I'm going to run the ball on 3rd and 15 for my own 3 because I just want to play it safe and punt the ball. Well, now we know why that happens, because you don't want to get safetied, which is when this game really turned. Because, the Bills on that first drive of the third quarter, they were driving down. They score a touchdown and go up 24-14. It's probably all over. But Josh Allen throws, he's still having those red zone troubles we were talking about, throws that pick. Lions get the ball. Jared Goff takes that safety on. It's 3rd and 15. Just run. Like, there's no reason to get crazy here from your own 3-yard line, because that a sack is absolutely a possibility there. And then their next possession after that, poor Michael Badgley indoors misses a 29-yard field goal. So you're talking about when you're Dan Campbell or you're the Lions coaching staff going through what went wrong in a game you lost by 3 points. The one play you're going to circle is the 29-yard field goal that your kicker missed, which is, by the way, based on research, only the fifth time that in the past 5 years that a kicker has missed a field goal indoors from inside 30 yards. So
not good.
Serious. I mean, like, I don't want you to answer. Don't give us this, like, okay, actually, I'm going to say two things here. One, I missed the safety because I was hanging out with my cousin Cameron. Cameron's awesome. She's out here. We're hanging out. And I took it easy today. Her friend Brandon, who's a podcast listener, shout out Brandon. She FaceTimed him, and he had a fantasy football question for me. I probably gave him a terrible answer.
But then, did you tell him to start Michael Badgley?
No, yeah, he's like, how many? He's like, do you think Michael Badgley make this field goal? I was like, obviously. No, he's like, should I trade George Kittle for Josh Jacobs? And I said, no. Anywho, if Breach, don't give me your blustery, I'm an athlete, but we know you're not, answer. You get 100 kicks at a 29-yard field goal. How many are you making?
Me?
You, right now.
Me, personally?
Yeah, 29 yards is not long, bro.
He's only BMAC.
You sounded terrified.
80 or 85.
How many?
80 or 85. And an NFL kicker is making 95. Probably 100.
Well, I would say not probably 100.
Justin Tucker's making 100 of them.
Well, yeah, I would just say Michael Badgley's probably not making 100 because of today.
Well, because he just missed one. I most NFL kickers, there's only been, I think, 14 missed field goals from inside 30 over the past 3 years. It is very difficult to miss from inside 30.
Breach, is it safe to say that a 29-yarder is literally a layup?
It's a
very similar to a layup.
It's a 29. I mean, that's. I feel like if you told me you win $1 million if you make a 29-yarder, I'm making that.
Well, someone should have told Michael Badgley that.
He is the money badger.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can't get those names in your kicker because it always comes back to bite you.
Don't hype yourself up. It's like you can't be doing has anybody ever done the money sign as like a professional athlete?
Him and Johnny Manziel are fighting over the trademark that's worthless now. Yeah. It's right. Failed everyone. It is like the ring where you watch the video, except you do the money sign.
The ring.
You're done.
All right, let's move on to the middle game. The Cowboys, hosted the Giants. And, I have a question about the Giants, but, they don't like us when we start. They don't like it when we start with the losing team. So let's start with the winning team. Brinson, 2 weeks ago, somehow this team loses to the Packers in Green Bay against a terrible offense and Aaron Rodgers. Last week, they dropped a 40-burger on the Vikings. This week, they handled their business, even though Dak had 2 first-quarter interceptions. Are the Giants the best team in the NFC.
I mean, you mean I'm sorry, the Cowboys.
Yes.
I was hoping you were going to set it up differently because I had like a kind of a hot takey thing.
Well, just do what you always do. Just answer the whatever question you want to be asked.
Somebody needs to put that on my tombstone. I was just going to say that I have the Eagles winning the NFC before the season. I don't know if you know that.
Heard about it.
But I think if you asked me to pick Eagles, Cowboys, neutral field.
Oh boy.
Oh yeah. Billy, you're not allowed to jump in the stream. Don't bother. Eagles in play.
You, Billy. Let's get Billy muted.
We don't have that. Unfortunately, Billy has all the power here.
That's for the best.
Right. Yep. No, is it? I think I would take the Cowboys. Dak had some really some of the like when he had defense with two or three picks. Two, right?
Two, yep.
Yeah. The second one was like a kind of a toss up, and CeeDee Lamb popped it up. And
yeah,
the first one was a bad throw.
It was not great. Yeah.
It got jumped. But like, man, the Cowboys, if Micah Parsons is a freaking animal. The Cowboys are just playing great across the board. My only two hangups of the Cowboys, saying that they would win the Super Bowl or could like make a deep, deep run, are one, Mike McCarthy in playoff games, and two, Jerry Jones did sell his soul in 1996, and that's kind of hard to come back from.
So, Breach, I'll mention this. Micah Parsons, fun fact, and then you can add your 2 cents. Micah Parsons, according to NFL Research, is the third player to have 12-plus sacks in each of his first two seasons since individual sacks were first recorded in 1982. You get first guess at who the other two are. One's easy, one's impossible.
Lawrence Taylor.
Wait, how many sacks?
12-plus first two seasons.
Lawrence Taylor.
No, miraculously enough.
Reggie White.
Reggie White is the layup. The other one was a part-time player his rookie season.
Did sacks come after Lawrence Taylor started?
82. So I think Lawrence was 80. He's at UNC at 80, I think.
That makes sense.
So the other one was drafted in the late aughts. I'll give you that.
Give us a year, and let's see if we can get it.
2000. I think he was drafted 2009. Wasn't a starter as a rookie, but had a ton of sacks, obviously, because he's on this list. And had off-field issues.
Alden Smith.
You got it. I mean, that's a pretty tight squad to be associated with in terms of.
I mean, Alden Smith is probably a Hall of Famer if he didn't have the off-field stuff.
You put everyone in the hall, but he had a great start to his career. I'll agree with that part of it. Breach, any thoughts on the Cowboys in terms of they're obviously going in the right direction? What up, Mike McCarthy? Is he doing things better, worse, the same? What do you like about the scene?
Here's what I'm going to say about this game. Is that if the Cowboys would have lost, that would have been embarrassing. This was in Dallas because all their Thanksgiving games are. But the Giants were so injured that the fact that the Giants looked like the better team in the first half was somewhat surprising. And to Brian Daboll's credit, that I did not expect the Giants to have any chance to be in this game. I thought it was going to be a blowout. You have everyone injured. All you have is Saquon Barkley. Give him the ball and pray that Daniel Jones can make some smart plays. And the fact that this team was leading 13-7. So I really thought this game said more about the Giants and about their coaching staff and preparing them, and that the Giants could actually be good. I didn't really take anything away from the Cowboys because, like you said, Dak threw two interceptions. They're playing a team they should have beaten based on the state of the Giants. So the Cowboys did what they should have done, which was win the game. So this really was more, are the Giants good? And so this actually made me feel better about the Giants, even though they lost.
Wow.
So, listen, Billy, the YouTube chat is not your place to like talk. Billy,
I thought you weren't looking at the chats.
I'm not. He posted on the stream.
Oh, I see.
The Giants, I think that's a great point by Breach. Like the comp I've been trying to make. What?
Given Breach's due, he finally made a good point. Go ahead.
I think it's the first time in 6 years.
Friends. Yep. Friends for a long time, but that's a good drop. I think that the point I've been trying to make about the Giants is, you remember when we had this? I can't remember what his name is, but he's a fourth guy on this podcast. He used
Spanky.
To
Spanky.
Who? Yeah, whatever his name is.
Spanky Wankman.
Sean, Steven, whatever his name is. Who cares? Anyway, the point being is that he really got upset when Sean McDermott benched Tyrod Taylor for Nathan Peterman in his first year. That Bills team made the playoffs like totally inexplicably. It was like based on all smoke and mirrors and coaching. And I think that this is what the Giants are. Like, if you're a Giants fan, you should be thrilled at the way that this team is playing through 12 weeks. Brian Daboll is a fantastic coach. He's getting the most out of everyone on the roster. They have no one at their skill positions outside of Saquon Barkley. Like, it is.
Darius Slayton.
I mean, Darius Slayton's playing. Yeah, but I mean, he's playing well, but I mean.
He's not an elite player.
Like, Darius Slayton is not a number one on like 75% of NFL teams.
And they just lost Wandale Robinson to an ACL.
Yes. They traded Kadarius Toney. Kenny Galladay is on like a milk carton somewhere.
Nice. Do they still do that? I don't know. I was just wondering if like people get the reference.
Oh my God. I just got an Amber Alert for Kadarius Toney.
Ouch.
That's probably unfair. That's probably bad. No, anyway, too far. Isaiah Hodges should have had a touchdown. Man, Brian Daboll was about to he lost his mind on that ineligible man down field call when they called the Hodges touchdown back early in the game. I think, but to Breach's larger point, if the Giants make the playoffs or don't, it doesn't matter. You have to feel good about this team and the way that they're playing week in and week out, and the way that you get a coaching advantage from having Daboll on the sidelines. And like, I mean, remember, we're not even 12 months removed from Joe Judge calling a quarterback sneak on 3rd and 1 in a season where they had like 3 wins and they're on their 3rd quarterback is the ultimate give up move. And Dable's out here like laying it on the line with onions and going for it on 4th downs where like, I think if you have a coach who clearly gets it and you have a GM who knows how to build a roster, I feel really good about things as a fan. Even if you have questions at like wide receiver, huge questions, quarterback, tons of questions, running back, you have contract questions. Questions all over the defense. They're dealing with tons of injuries, and they still went into Dallas against a white-hot Cowboys team and like had them kind of on the ropes, except for a couple of bad breaks.
So, Brenton, let me ask you this. Knowing exactly what you know now, so you don't know what's going to happen with Daniel Jones or Saquon Barkley or anything else, what are the Giants' playoff odds for next year?
Do you want percentage, or you want me to give you
whatever you prefer.
Right, okay, so Philly, Dallas are both good. I would say
as you think about it, this team is basically, to your point, I think is what you're saying. They're actually playing for next year, but they're just sort of crushing it in the meantime.
The Commanders might go on trade for Aaron Rodgers.
That would make them worse.
That feels unlikely. Sorry.
This is a Heineke stand podcast. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, I love Heineke. I had a couple my family members here today who are like Panthers fans are like, they're like, what? Like, what's the deal with Tepper? I was like, you know, Carson Wentz told the Panthers no. They're like, what? Like, it's like, yeah, it's pretty bad. As for the Giants, I think they are probably coming into the season or coming into the preseason.
The 2023 preseason. Yep.
Yeah. I would say they are +150 to make the playoffs. Like, yes, make the playoffs.
Okay, go ahead.
And -135 miss the playoffs.
That sound one plus 150 sounds a little low, don't you think? No?
You think they should be like 2 or
possibly in the comments said +250, then he changed it to +310.
I think the Giants possibly. Obviously, like the quarterback position matters.
Yeah, there are a lot of questions, right?
Right. Like if they trade for somebody who's a high end quarterback, that changes everything. If Daniel Jones is leaves and so that's a lot of questions there. But I think the Giants will be a trendy team to make the playoffs next year.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Breach, let me ask you this, because I didn't watch this game in totality because we had people over and I saw you tweet about this. And then when I watched the highlights to try to catch up, I didn't see that CD Lamb touchdown catch in the back of the end zone. What happened on that play?
That was
so
crazy.
CD Lamb made a fantastic one-handed catch where it appeared he got both feet down. I think a lot of people did. And this was actually a rule I didn't even realize until it happened to the Bengals. It happened to the Bengals 4 or 5 weeks ago. So I did know the rule today, and that is, so if your toes hit and they're facing, if you're falling forward and your toes hit, that's all you need to hit. But if you're falling backwards, your heel also has to come down in bounds because it's not just your toe. It's not a toe tap. And so CeeDee Lamb got – he was falling backwards out of bounds. His toe hit, which people assumed meant – his second toe hit. And
his right toe hit.
Right. And then his heel came down out of bounds. And so that made it out of bounds. They overturned the play. And he did not get the touchdown. But you got to Google the CeeDee Lamb catch because it was ridiculous. He just put one hand out. It was a laser out of the end zone. And he just pulled it out and made a fantastic – he still caught it. I mean, it was incomplete from a technical standpoint, but he caught the ball out of bounds by 1 centimeter.
So his right toe was in. And then before I was, my mom was like, asked me like, so explain what's going on here. I was like, actually, this is the one time I really wish you wouldn't ask me that, but his right toe was in, his right heel didn't come down, but he tapped his left toe. And as Breach points out, because you're going backwards, his left heel came down.
There it is. Okay. Nice. Billy has it up on the screen if you watch it on YouTube.
It's like so close. Like his right, like if you watch it, his right foot could have been out of bounds before his left toe comes down. But yeah, the heel, yeah, it's upon, like, because of the intricacies of the rule, it's like, you know, it's, I guess, kind of easy. But it was, I mean, that's probably the best incompletion of the year.
And so most people assumed it was a touchdown because he got both toes down, but then one heel landed out of bounds. And when you're falling backwards, it is a different rule than falling forward. So, which is kind of crazy to think about, but the rules are the rules.
So I didn't hear our own. I don't know if there were there any controversial officiating plays with the Lions Bills. I was streaming on the phone. Like we did launch and sort of streaming a lot and.
We did gloss over the face mask in the Vikings Patriots game.
Right. Well, I was gonna say that, like, I thought the two that, like, I heard at full volume with Pereira and Terry McCauley, like, it feels like these officiating guys, and Steratore is always great, I think, but like the officiating guys in the booth are starting to like take aggressive stances and kind of nail some of these things. Like, they sort of kind of went wishy washy before. Terry McCauley, what was the
Hunter?
Well, and real quick, Brinson, Clarence in the chat asks if his left toe hits, that was the second toe to hit, and if he just pops his foot up real fast so the heel never hits, then it would have been a touchdown because the heel never hits. So or if the heel just stays a centimeter above the end line, it's a touchdown. So it was just like he had to pop it up and he's falling backward. He couldn't do anything.
That's asking a lot from a physical standpoint, yes. I mean, like,
right. Yes.
If he pulled that off, it would have been a touchdown.
The other one was the Hunter Henry touchdown that wasn't. The ball felt like it.
Oh my god!
And we don't have to get stuck on this because we need to wrap. But that felt like, and Terry McCauley got it right off the bat. It just to me looked like he had the hand underneath it. The ball moved, and to your point, Brenton, you made this point at the time. Worst case, it's first and goal of the 1 yard line.
I had to do I think this is one of the things that frustrates fans in general is. My dad loves football. He loves watching football, but why is that not a touchdown? Like he's across the goal. And so I basically did a three item thing where it's like, if you're a runner and you get across, or if you're a receiver, you catch it and you turn into a runner and you're across. But if you're a receiver and you're across, the plane of the goal line doesn't matter. That's sort of the key point there. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
You have to finish the catch.
Well, and Brinson, what I had written to you guys in Slack was that this is why the catch rule is dumb, because this literally could be a touchdown, an incomplete pass, or first and goal at the one. This is while the review was happening. There are literally three options here that, you know, you could gamble on. And, of course, it ended up being
last week. Was it what was the one last week where it was like it could have been a touchdown catch or an interception? And you're like,
yeah, that was the – because I think the refs were about to rule it incomplete. I think that was in the Chiefs game in the end zone. And then they realized the ball didn't hit the ground. It was like, okay, well, the guy either intercepted was a touchdown.
No, they pulled the BS where they're like this guy, like somebody screaming in his ear. And he's like, upon further discussion, the ruling on the field is a touchdown. It's like all five of y'all ruled it incomplete, bro.
All right, we'll get out on this, but quickly, Bill Belichick was asked about the Hunter Henry thing. He said, why don't you guys go to the officials, ask them about the play?
Classic. I got to say, I'm going to
that's a good answer. One more
special teams thing out there.
Oh, come on.
Because anyone who was gambling on the Cowboys-Giants game is probably a little.
Did you take the Wilson role where you're like, one more thing?
Well, Wilson said we're going to get out of there. So I just got to bring this up real quick because it was Brett Maher kicking a 46-yard field goal. My buddy had texted me this morning, said, Breach, I'm gambling on your two picks. He was taking the Lions to cover and the Cowboys to cover. He put them in a parlay, apparently, because I picked them, which I did. And I was like, why'd you pick the Thanksgiving games? They're so unpredictable. So anyway, the Lions hit. I'm like, okay, this is good. So now Maher's going out to kick this field goal. And I'm like, oh, it's 46 yards. He's going to nail it. It's game over. It will put the Cowboys up 31-13. So even if the Giants go out and get a trash touchdown, it doesn't matter. They're still going to cover. Maher misses the field goal. He misses the field goal. He crushes everyone's hopes and dreams. And here is
the order.
Here is the crazy stat I tweeted out. Brett Maher has never missed in his entire career from 60 yards or more. He is 4 of 4. From 40 to 49 yards, he is 62.5%. He is 15 of 24. That is insane. The guy cannot hit from 40 to 49, but if you're kicking from 62, boom, he'll nail it with no problem. So he misses the field goal. The Giants score a touchdown, backdoor cover, and everyone who bet on the Cowboys to cover lost.
I was just saying that, and look, it's Thanksgiving Day. Well, now the day after Thanksgiving, everyone's heard many stories multiple times, but you know, you talked about this Brett Maher thing like 4 days ago when the Cowboys played.
And then it happened. It happened on the field. So it's just,
I think at one point I was yelling and like in my house, I was like, I just think they should do, I know they're down 15 and they could get an all-size kick, but I think it's just time to take a knee and like, just like, you don't want to get my injured. And everybody was like, what are you talking about? I was like, nothing on the Cowboys. Wilson, you'll like this too. You know what came home today?
What the came
donkey,
home?
The donkey turkey leg parlay.
What is that?
Brazil, Portugal, Bills, Cowboys. Ah, boom.
What was the Cowboys spread? Oh, you could parlay it. You could tease it down.
No. It was just money line. Like just Brazil wins, Portugal wins, and Ghana made it a little sweaty early.
Yeah, Ghana's good, and Portugal.
Before we end here, are we gonna make our predictions for USA England? Our 5 second prediction.
All right, you have 10 seconds, Breach. We're getting out. All right,
and then after that, we'll make our predictions for NC State Carolina.
I don't know what those are, but USA England 1-1. I think they're going to draw. They're going to get the draw.
Brenton, USA England score.
I'm going to go with the Ryan Wilson special. Do you want me to take 4-1 or 3-0?
Either one. I'll take the other.
I'll take 4-1 England.
I'll take 3-0. Fire Berhalter. I love those.
Again, we don't need to linger on this, but like, USA looks like a crap team. England's going to
They're a good team. I don't like the coach. I like the boys. I don't like the coach. All right. Breach, 5 seconds. Who's going to win UNC, NC State to placate their buddy here?
North Carolina.
Tar Heels.
It is. I got North Carolina by 50. Brenton, what do you have?
I have the under.
Go Tar Heels.
I'll be the waiver on this episode, but I have the under.
Go Tar Heels.
This is officially my own personal hell. Got to play it one more time. Go ahead. One more time.
Go Tar Heels.
Okay. I have the under 56. Nasty weather in Chapel Hill. And, man, if we pull off a win.
No one will care except our buddy Kevin.
One will care.
Hey, listen.
Go Tar Heels.
And celebrate the Tar Heels. Hit the like button. If you're sitting there on your way out the door, hit the like button. And Brenton will come to your house and you'll go Tar Heels. That's a wrap for me, for Brenton, for Breach. He's going to get back to telemarketing duties.
Oh, wait. You never asked me what I'm thankful for.
What are you thankful for?
I'm thankful for all our wonderful listeners and viewers who show up routinely and do this nonsense with us. And, I mean, talk an insane amount of trash, which I'm just not reading right now because my Wi-Fi stinks, at me. Thankful for all of you. And begrudgingly thankful for Wilson, Breach, and now Billy.
All right. Bye, everybody. See you on the Flippity Flop.
Happy Thanksgiving, you turkeys.
hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What about when your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.